Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives out there in the darkness. How are you? It's Wednesday morning, the middle of the week. Big news for the time being. How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm in shock, man.
You're in shock? Are you really in shock?
I am in shock.
Why are you in shock?
Because Al Franken hugged a black woman.
That's what you're in shock about? We have a conversation before we get on the air, and Riley's like, I can't believe it. Al Franken hugged a black woman. He's going to be doing a lot of that when he runs for senator, my friend.
Where?
He's going to be hugging a lot of black women, touching a lot of babies. He's going to be doing the whole rigmarole.
Okay.
I'm not announcing his run, but I'm speculating that might happen. Hey, folks, I just want you to know before we start this broadcast, 46% of the people polled find George W. Bush untrustworthy. 49% find him trustworthy. Bush was at 62% in September of 2000, or just last September. That means that it's starting to creep through. And you can tell he's untrustworthy because why would he rush the nomination of a Supreme Court justice to 8 o'clock last night, you know, when all of this flack is coming at his administration for, you know, his treasonous Deputy Chief of Staff, Karl Rove? Why would he just say, all right, let's do this nomination now? We got to do it now because too many people are thinking about Karl Rove, despite what the right-wing pundits might tell you, Bill O'Reilly being one of them, that people just don't care. That is proving not to be true. A lot of people do care, Mark Riley. A lot of people, too. 53% of those polled say they are following the issue closely. 73% call it a serious matter. Now, we don't... not big believers in polls, but Karl Rove is on the cover of Newsweek. He's on the cover of Time Magazine. Everybody's seeing the weird, creepy, cavefish-like entity that actually runs the government in this country alongside of, you know, the neocon death cult cabal. And they do care. But we're going to go ahead and talk about the Supreme Court nomination because it's our job.
Well, it's our job. And, you know, Bush did go to all the trouble to nominate the guy. It was 9 o'clock, by the way, not 8 o'clock last night.
No, 9 o'clock he announced it, but CNN tipped it at 8 o'clock, and they had it on the money. They started speculating about and talking about the nominee as if it were,
as if it was a done deal.
I mean, I got the CNN breaking news at 8 o'clock last night that it was going to be this guy, John G. Roberts Jr.
John G. Roberts, yeah. He's a very interesting character, to say the least. A consummate Beltway insider. Nominated by a guy who got himself elected initially as being an outsider. So It's kind of interesting how that's working out.
What do you mean?
In other words, when George W. Bush ran for the presidency, he did not run as a Washington insider. He ran as the governor of Texas. He was going to bring a new culture to Washington. You remember that?
Yeah, but anyone who bought that crap had to be the most retarded people in the world. I mean, come on. Yeah, I mean, he's only the son of a president, you know, who was, you know, also the head of the CIA agency. I'm an outsider. You're an idiot.
Well,
you're not an outsider.
That's what he, that's how he managed, well, that and the little gerrymandering in Florida is how he managed to get himself
elected. And speaking of gerrymandering in Florida, this guy, John G. Roberts Jr., the new Supreme Court nominee, had something to do with that. He was a lawyer down there and that aided in the stealing of the election in 2000.
Provided legal advice. And by the way,
I say it.
No, but see, this is going to be a very interesting thing if it comes up in the confirmation hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what was the quality of the legal advice you provided? All we know is that he provided some private legal advice to George W. Bush in Florida at that time in 2000 when the fear was that the courts were going to give the election to Al Gore. Remember, it was their fear that the courts would rule, and in fact, one court did rule for a full recount. So this guy, who, again, a consummate D.C. Beltway insider, a guy who had served, as a deputy solicitor general, a guy who knew the law, advised George W. Bush how to best navigate. Of course, he had his brother to help him out, too.
Well, yeah. Well, he's part of the fix, is I think, what
exactly.
We're saying.
Exactly.
Now, let's tell people who this guy is so they know. A lot of people are just getting up. They didn't hear this. The Supreme Court nominee that George Bush has chosen is Judge John G. Roberts, Jr. He's 50 years old. He sits on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. He was nominated by George W. Bush for that part, for that role, for that position in May 2001. And he was... It was a long confirmation battle. His father had tried to get him the gig once before, and he did not make the nomination. Yeah, Bush's father. Yeah, George W. H.W. Bush. He was the associate counsel to President Reagan. He was also the principal deputy solicitor general in the Department of Justice under George H.W. Bush. Now, as you told me, Riley, tell me what that means, because I think it is a window into how much this guy knows about the law and what he has done. He was a Republican deputy solicitor general in the Department of Justice. What does that guy do?
Okay. What the deputy solicitor general does is represent the government in cases before various federal courts. Now, it's instructive to know that his boss was none other than Ken Starr, the guy who investigated Clinton years later.
So this guy is a Republican Party, you know, stooge on some level if he worked for Ken Starr, because, you know, Ken Starr wasted millions and millions of dollars of taxpayers' money drawing a case against President Bill Clinton for sexual exploits. So this guy is a Republican stooge, and the deputy solicitor general does exactly what. So that means he sort of molds the case for the Republican Party. He molds the case for the president. What is that?
Well, he makes the case for whoever his boss is at the time. And in this case, because he was a Republican appointee, he was working for a Republican president. Now, he went at one point in a brief that he filed in 1990. He said that he felt Roe versus Wade was unconstitutional and should be overturned. That's the significance of his tenure as deputy solicitor general. He served from 89 through 93. This was a situation where later, when questioned about this decision, Robert said, well, I was representing the views of the administration. They are not necessarily my views, and I know how to separate my views from the law.
Well, that's what they all sort of say once they're under the gun, aren't they? Don't they sort of say that stuff? It's like, you know, I this is how I feel, but I wouldn't use it to legislate with.
Well, see, what's interesting about Roberts is that he is the darling of, you know, we've talked many times before about the slight schism in the conservative movement between social conservatives and business conservatives. Well, Roberts falls squarely on the side of the big business conservatives. That whole Arroyo Toad thing that went on in when he ruled in a case involving this big government construction project that would have endangered this particular toad. Of course, he said no. He was a friend of big business on that.
Okay, level. So what you're saying is that he will side with corporations over environmental causes. Apparently, Roberts issued a dissent that challenged the constitutionality of the Endangered Species
Act. Yes.
So this is, you know, an important point for Democrats and for people left-leaning, is that he has at one time in his career said he would like to see Roe v. Wade overturned. He has, challenged the constitutionality of the Endangered Species Act. He also, People for the American Way said Roberts' dissent indicated he may be ready to join the ranks of right-wing conservative judges who seek to severely limit congressional authority to protect the environment. All right, now, but the bottom line is, folks, we lose no matter what. All right, there is no winning here. Either way, we lose. We lost this fight in November. If those of you who voted for Bush, who were on the fence and were afraid of terrorism and did not take into mind that he would most likely was going to be able to nominate at least one Supreme Court judge, then it falls squarely in your court why we lost this battle. The right will now control all three branches of government, no matter what we do. Harry Reid has said that this guy is qualified. Schumer said he'll filibuster, but that seems to be Schumer these days. He's ready to filibuster anything. And then I like that about Schumer. But this guy is most likely going to get through. He was a shrewd political choice by George W. Bush. Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, actually said, I believe that Judge Roberts will strictly interpret the Constitution and not legislate from the bench, unquote. That's a scary thing. So he's got the religious right placated. He's got his corporate interests placated, but apparently no one is jumping up and down, but they're okay with it. And now some of the Democrats are okay with this.
I wouldn't say that the social conservatives are quite okay just yet. However, two rulings that he made, two things that he did that ought to be part of the questioning before the Senate Judiciary Committee. The French fry decision that he made, where he said that the District of Columbia, by the way, under a law that has since been discarded, had the right to actually arrest a child, put that child in handcuffs, and actually incarcerate a 12-year-old child for eating a French fry in a Washington, D.C. train station. The other thing that ought to make people very, very nervous here, Mark, is that he joined an appeals court ruling just last year that upheld police trunk searches even if cops do not say they are looking for evidence of a crime.
And also, it's important to talk about, maybe in a minute or two, that they were tipped, the social conservative leadership and the conservatives in general were tipped a couple of days ago that Gonzalez wouldn't be the guy.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, you know, it's sort of George W. Bush saying, I get it. I understand. I'm gonna pander to you guys. This is shrewd politics. This is not stupid stuff. And you know who probably decided it all?
Yep.
So let's continue taking him down if we can, because I think that is still really the big story. The nomination, big story, but this is going to be ongoing. Nomination hearings will most likely take place at the end of August, maybe September. So this discussion is not going to stop. I'm not going to treat it like a building is burning down this morning, if that's okay with you people. So when we come back, Karl Rove, the right spin on the importance of Karl Rove and the we're going to crucify him, that's for sure. The guy's a traitor. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's Wednesday morning. We'll be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnson, singer-songwriter, is going to be with us to play some music. We'll be giving away, stuff. There'll be some coffee for you. We'll have Johnny K Street, Milf Cardinal Milfington will stop by. That'll be at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. How do you like that? I will be at the Gotham Comedy Club this weekend if you want to come down. I'm not pressuring you, okay? I'm just telling you, just putting that out there. If you want to call us and help us figure out, look, it's my belief that this Supreme Court nomination, it is what it is. We're going to talk about it this morning, and we're going to talk about other stories as well. This is going to go on for a while. Is it the most important thing that we should be talking about this morning? What do you know about Roberts? Do you think that we should filibuster Roberts? Do you think that we should continue to attack Rove? Can we do both? Of course we can. What are you thinking? Because I think the announcement of this Supreme Court nomination, given that the nomination hearings obviously aren't going to take place until late August or September, were part of the great distraction from the reality that we have an Oval Office that is in trouble.
Well, yeah, and see, what this is intended to do.
Can I give him the phone number real quick?
Sure.
866-303-2270. All right? There you go.
What this is intended to do, Mark, mm-hmm. is to make the Bush administration look like, in spite of all of the problems that they've had in Iraq, in spite of all of this nonsense with Karl Rove, in spite of all of this obvious corruption, all of these alleged high crimes and misdemeanors, that George W. Bush is still a president that knows how to pick a Supreme Court justice. He is trying to some extent, redeem the aura of competence that he had going into the last election, which he's totally lost since. I mean, he's lost it since the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
So now this is, I'm in charge. I can get some network television time for this thing, stage it properly, give it the proper amount of melodrama, completely disregard the wishes of his wife, apparently, because his wife had said publicly that she thought he should name a woman. But he did this for obvious political reasons, and it's to take the heat off of the cesspool that's become his inner circle.
Well, yeah, and the bottom line is he has not commented. He is stonewalled. This is a president that is not taking control in terms of being a leader that is honest with the American people. His right-hand man is in deep trouble, clearly guilty of treason, possibly actually prosecutable as a perjurer. If the memo that was on the airplane going to Germany with Colin Powell mm-hmm. was discussed with the president's aides, and he knew about Plame before he said he did, because he testified the grand jury otherwise. But this is real stuff. So, you know, Bush has got a couple of choices. Either he can do what he did last night, you know, and nominate something, somebody at just the right time to distract even more from this, or he can get straight with the American people, which is probably not what he's going to do. Now, let's be clear about this. The right wing is now telling us that America doesn't care. Karl Rove is on the cover of Newsweek and Time magazine. The ABC News poll that was released yesterday says the doubts about the administration's cooperation has been jumping from 47% in 2003, believing the White House was cooperating, to 39% a few weeks after that, to 25% as of yesterday. 53% of those polled say they are following the issue closely, and 73% call it a serious matter. The right wing, Bill O'Reilly, primarily one of the big spokespeople for this new approach, which is people don't care, it's crap. Anybody who has listened and been alive, anyone who's over 35 in this country, anyone who has vague memories of Watergate, realize what this smells like. This could be a complete indication of covert just illegal activities, espionage on behalf of the inner circle, the neocon death cult, the cabal that runs President Bush, who he is now trying to protect by not saying anything, clearly showing he is not acting as the leader of this country.
If the Democrats are smart, and this is just my own opinion, they will plot their strategy on John Roberts out of the public eye. They got plenty of time. They don't have to start messing with him until the end of August. They need to stay public on Karl Rove. They need to continue to hit. You can deal with the strategy. How are you going to deal with this guy? What questions are you going to ask him in confirmation? You can do that out of harm's way, out of the public eye. You cannot allow this to distract from what's going on around Bush.
Well, that's what they know now. They know in the climate we live in, with the blogosphere teeming on both the right and left, that if they throw this out there now, there's just going to be, you know, never-ending speculations about who Robert is, you know, who Roberts is, what he's done. I'm referring to the new Supreme Court nominee, Judge John G. Roberts Jr. They know that they're going to set that hornet's nest just flying, you know, with like what's going to happen next. Are they going to filibuster? Who's going to be the next nomination? When really the discussion should remain on the corruption within the Oval Office, within his inner circle. I mean, this stuff stinks like Watergate. It's bigger than we ever imagined, and I don't think it's time to let it go. A lot of people think it's time to let it go. You might be tired of hearing about it, but I don't think it's time to let it go, and we're not going to. 866-303-2270. What do you think? It's 27 past the hour. We're going to talk to you after this to see what you think the priorities of the country should be right now in terms of sussing out the truth, speculating. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Yeah, we got a nominee, Judge John G. Roberts Jr. That's who they nominated as a distraction from the Karl Rove case. And you know, at 8 at night, you know, very suspiciously timed, after he's still not willing to comment. George W. Bush not willing to comment about his own inner circle. Unbelievable. So what do you need to know about him? He's said things, against Roe v. Wade, and he's against environmental protection, and he's a corporate lackey, a Republican lackey, and quite possibly completely anti-abortion. There you go. Yeah, I don't know if that's the right
language. Yeah, but that's not what he's going to say when he gets in front of the Senate.
Well, but that's a suspicion. But, you know, apparently he's well-educated enough to placate some Democrats. But we're not going to get into that. We're going to talk to you people who have called us at 6:30 here in the morning in New York City to tell us what you think we need to be talking about. Tom, listening to WINZ in Florida, how are you?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, I'm doing okay, but, you know, this is a no-brainer. We need to stay on this Iraq issue.
Yep.
This president lied to us. They got us into this war illegally. What Nixon did was a traffic ticket compared to what's going on today, because people have actually died as a result of these guys doing this, and their buddies are making a lot of money, like Halliburton and the oil companies, and we need to wake up, and really, this is a pivotal point in our country.
That's right.
Really really is.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, Tom. Thanks for your call. That's what everyone should focus on, that this thing about Rove, if you think this isn't interesting or you don't think that that it's important to the country, this whole Rove leak is essentially about the inner circle, the neocon death cult, the cabal that operates George W. Bush's covert behavior, their espionage. What they have done is a guy basically called them on one of the lies that they sent the troops to Iraq for, that they built their case for war on. Joe Wilson said that Iraq was not getting yellowcake uranium from Niger, and he said that publicly. And then what happened was they outed his wife, who was a CIA agent, and what you get here, what that means is that they were so protective of their desire to go to war, which they had since the mid-90s, that they assaulted a guy's wife. They put the national security of this country in danger. They put her in danger. They put everyone who worked for her in danger. They put the future of the CIA in danger, because how are they going to get human intelligence now that they know that their own guys are going to, you know, out them if they want to do that that type of vengeful politics? So what this is about is Karl Rove's leak not only put the United States national security in danger, but it protected the lie that we must go to Iraq, where, as of today, 1,765 U.S. troops have been killed. Thousands have been injured. There are new reports coming out that say this is an English report that says that 24,865 civilians have been killed, which is a low number, because it's probably based on just reports, police reports and death reports, but it could be higher.
It could be much, much higher. But I'm going to tell you something more. There is something that could come out of all of this. And I don't know if our politicians have the stones to pull it off. But just suppose for a moment that somebody, some Democrat in the Senate, jumped up and said, you know what, we should put off any hearings on the Judiciary Committee regarding John Roberts until this Rovegate grand jury finishes its work.
Make some calls, Riley. Maybe we can get some senators to do that, because I think that's a great idea, because you've got a president that's not willing to comment on his own inner circle. He's acting like an idiot, and all he can do is now force a nomination to try and distract from this. This guy is so clearly not in control. He is so clearly working at the behest of the neocon death cult, and he's caught in that crossfire we talked about yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, if indictments do in fact come out, see, because I made the point last week, I have a serious problem with someone as apparently clueless as George W. Bush has said he is himself publicly, being in charge of nominating someone who's going to sit on the bench for the next 30 years.
And you know he knows. You know he knows everything. I'm not trying to characterize a president as a victim of any kind. He knows everything. He okayed it. He had to have okayed it. It goes, the buck ends with him. There's no doubt about that. But now he's acting like an idiot. And he's not an idiot. This is a very, very cagey, a very shrewd politician. This guy is not a dummy.
No, he's calculating. He's got calculating shrewd people all around him, in the person of the vice president, in Rove, in Melman, in Rumsfeld, all of these folks. And they are all acting in concert to take the public's eye off of Rove, to take the public's eye off of the lies that led up to Iraq, and to focus on something else. And I think that he can be stopped in that regard.
Well, good. I hope you're right. Because the fact of the matter that any American in this country accepts their president saying, we're going to have to wait for the investigator to figure this out.
I don't know.
Who's guilty right down the hall from me.
Walk down the hall,
you monkey. You know what I mean? Let's take another call. Cole, listening in Missouri on XM. How are you?
Hey, Cole.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Nothing. We're just getting all worked up.
No, man, I love it. That's what we need you guys for. We need you to drink your coffee and get angry. Awesome. No, hey, you know, I'd like to say a little bit about the nomination, but first, I mean, yeah, this is an obvious distraction. They control the news cycles. They know how to do these things. They've been doing this since forever, the beginning of time or whatever in politics, where they can control how these stories break to cover up one story or another. And basically, I mean, can you imagine guys like Sean Hannity, you know, all these right-wing people that are covering this up saying, oh, this isn't such a big deal?
Right.
Can you imagine if a Democrat had done what Rove did? Can you imagine what they'd say, how un-American he was? I mean, I can't even imagine what they would say about it.
Absolutely. I wish we had a Democrat that was capable of the type of things that Karl Rove was capable of.
Yeah. I mean, what would happen if, for example, James Carville had done something like this?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a good point. So we're going to go ahead and keep bashing him then.
Yeah, and absolutely. The main thing that I was wanting to get at, though, the thing about this nomination that's so important, first of all, you talk about Riley talking about This guy, yeah, he's 50 years old, so he could sit there for, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
Four?
Yeah.
I mean, that's much more when you compare it to the worst nomination I think that Bush ever made, which is Ashcroft. I mean, being from Missouri, I mean, Missourians don't like, Republicans in Missouri don't like Ashcroft.
Is that creepy?
He had enough of him. I mean, the guy, I mean, he loses to a dead guy.
Yeah.
He's all about legislating morality. I mean, he's covering nude statues and busting Tommy Chong for making, you know, for making
bongs.
I mean,
yeah.
He's taking any resources and money out of the administration, busting a guy who's making bongs. When there's people making, hello, bombs, drop a letter. Come on, dude. I mean, you're killing me here. And the guy, this is what I got to say.
Okay.
The guy who's covering the statue, the nude statue, he's kind of like the guy who makes all the gay jokes so everyone won't think he's gay.
Right.
I'm thinking Ashcroft's the one staring at the statue, you know?
Yeah.
But he didn't want anyone to think so.
Sure.
Like, well, if I cover the statue, people won't, you know, think I'm looking at it, you know?
Exactly.
Wow. You make some good points
thanks a lot, Cole. We should get a conference call going with Cole and Brian from Everett. Cole makes that.
He's
making some real sense, and I think he's absolutely right. The real issue is, all right, this Supreme Court Justice nominee, this guy Roberts, you know, is what he is. He's probably going to, you know, be pushed through. The nomination process is going to be long. It's not going to happen to the end of August, but the beginning of September. But the bottom line, what's important right now is to stay on the fact that Karl Rove is guilty of treason, and he's guilty. He might be just the tip of the iceberg in terms of, you know, just how covert, how they created this, a covert, what would you call it, Riley? I don't want to call it a conspiracy because it's not. A covert mode of operations.
It's a veneer is what it is. It's a veneer.
That doesn't have any of the good, you know, evil words, veneer.
Well, but see, it's...
Hold on, wait. It's an insidious veneer.
It's an insidious veneer, and if you scratch away the veneer, what do you have on the other side?
Evil!
Raw evil.
Yes, raw evil at the core of the Oval Office, and he looks like the cavefish Karl Rove.
Well, look, the bottom line here, Mark, is very, very simple, and you pointed it out earlier.
Hmm.
George W. Bush... Never mind what he is going to tell the public, for his own edification, needed to go in and find out exactly who did what here, assuming that he doesn't know, because that's what he says. Now, if he's not prepared to do that, why is he fit to serve as our chief executive, as our commander-in-chief, as the guy who sends hundreds of thousands of troops overseas to fight a war? How can he be competent enough to do that if he's not competent enough to sit his inner circle down and find out what the hell's going on with these leaks?
Shifts his statements from "I'll fire anybody who's involved in this" to "I'll fire anybody who committed a crime." Then he says, "I can't. We're just going to have to wait for the investigator to figure out what happened." Walk down the hall, idiot. Be honest with the American people. You don't understand. You know, but then maybe this is the best thing possible. Let the investigator do his work, and let's take it all the way to the top. Let's take it right to George W. Bush. Because he knew what was going on. He allowed it to go on, whether he had no choice or not. He is the front man for the neocon death cult, and this cabal, you know, instituted this covert sort of, you know, veneer, if you want to call it what Riley did. But I say it was a mode of operations that bullied the CIA into giving them the information they want, and then bullied, you know, leaked Valerie Plame's name, which compromised national security, and also, you know, put hundreds of people at risk and compromised the future of intelligence in this country. This guy is a traitor, and, you know, his employer, they should all be run out. And I believe that federal prosecutor Fitzgerald is going to do his job.
You know, it's interesting. We got this situation with this memo, which is going to could well end up being the smoking gun. I'm talking about now the memo that was on the plane with Colin Powell and them.
Yeah, let's hold off on that, and we'll talk about that in a second. Let's take one more call, and then we're going to talk about the memo in just a minute. Earl, what's up, Earl?
Yeah, hey, guys.
Hey, Earl.
I really love your show.
Thank you.
And I agree with the thrust of today's show, which is we got to keep the focus on Roe.
Yeah.
Okay. But I just have a comment on this nomination of Roberts that I think you got to jump on early.
Okay.
Which is that the Democrats need to begin organizing the opposition to Roberts now.
I hear you.
And I think they need to keep it very simple. One issue. The American people can understand one issue, which is he's against Roe v. Wade. The overwhelming majority of American people are in favor of a woman's right to choose.
He's not going to go on the record as being against Roe v. Wade. What he's going to say is, yeah, I wrote a brief on behalf of the President of the United States expressing a constitutional problem.
I agree with you, but I think the Democrats need to be able to filibuster on this one issue because they roll over time and time again. And I got to tell you, I'm sickened by Hillary Clinton, our middle-of-the-road moderate senator in New York, who today comes out, instead of coming out against this guy Roberts, she's coming out saying, well, I'm going to wait and see what the Judiciary Committee comes out and says. I mean,
Chris,
you know, if you want to be president, you have to lead.
Earl, do you think they should fight everybody? I mean, maybe you know, Schumer and Hillary are doing a good cop, bad cop routine.
I don't think they're doing a good cut. You know what? She's so moderate. She's like Republican light.
Okay, right, but let's say for the sake of argument, you're on the Judiciary Committee. Real quickly, what would you ask Roberts that would get him to take a position on Roe v. Wade?
Well, that's a good question, and I'll have to think about it, and I'll write you guys an answer.
Yeah, call us back when you come up with a question. We'll pass it on to the right people. Thanks for your call, Earl.
Okay.
Riley, I want to talk about that memo. It looks like people are pretty worked up on the phones. Should we keep them on the phones for a minute?
Yeah, we love to talk to
people. So stay with us. This is getting exciting. It's 46 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hey, it's 51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're talking about it. We're talking about Supreme Court nominee Judge John G. Roberts Jr., but we're not focusing on it, okay? The guy's relatively anti-abortion. He's very pro-corporation. He's anti-environment. He's everything you expected, but he's not as bad as you expected. But he's bad, but that's the way it is. We lose on this one. We lose the third branch of government. That's what we got into, the election happened. But we'll get into that in a second. Right now, it's hard to sometimes understand what the hell the main media is saying. So that's why we got the iNews Wi-Fi headline translator. The iNews 5000, the Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's feed it some headlines. All right. From the Associated Press, Bush nominates John Roberts for Supreme Court. Bush nominates John Roberts for Supreme Court. Translation. Bush sprays media with Roe be gone. Yow! From the Associated Press, some in GOP hope Rice runs for president. Some in GOP hope Rice runs for president. Translation, Rice's family hope Rice runs for president. From Associated Press, again from the Associated Press, Clinton warns of global warming disasters. Clinton warns of global warming disasters. Translation, ex-president vows action after gelato melts too fast. Okay, Riley, I promise you we talk about that memo, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. I think we should talk about the fact that lawmakers, and that is Republican lawmakers, that is Tom DeLay, Denny Hastert, and that bunch, are blaming the Department of Veterans Affairs for using outdated estimates that led to a $1.3 billion shortfall in the agency's 2005 budget. Maybe they were just trying to get enough money. Maybe they were highballing it to get a sweeter deal, which makes sense to me, given that apparently the relationship between the Congress and the Veteran Affairs Department has been sort of contentious, and this has been going on for a long time, but now there is a war going on.
Well, see, you can't expect Tom DeLay and or Denny Hastert to blame themselves for this. They were told... Okay, I'm going to say this again. They were told that the VA had a case of the shorts. They knew this already. They chose to ignore it, and they chose to punish the people that told them, most notably New Jersey Congressman Christopher Smith, who's a member of their own party.
Right.
Now they're coming back and saying, well, you know, it's really not fair to place blame. It's really not fair to point fingers. And we have to point fingers. It's the VA's fault. The fact of the matter is there are five times as many Iraq War veterans needing treatment from the VA, medical treatment from the VA, than they originally estimated. that's worth $250 million. That's not all of the money that's coming up short, but it's a chunk of it.
But, you know, it's like, to me, it's a no-brainer. Look, you know, there are more vets coming home sick, and they need more money. How could you not figure that out? Let's take this quick call from Austin, Texas. Chris, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, Chris.
Yeah, I was just calling about the road thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Democrats really need to keep that as the front issue.
You had to deal with them out there in Texas. Have you known about...
Oh, yeah, I'm a victim of Roe, and there's two things that's going on here.
Yeah.
One is they didn't really plan on this special prosecutor getting this far.
His job, yeah.
So they've thrown this nominee out there. To
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Or the other thing that could be scary is Roe knows if he's going to take a fall, he's going to use his distraction, put a fairly radical, not in terms of Roe versus Wade, but more in terms of fascist corporatist policy.
Right.
And use him as a distraction, turn around, press for an early confirmation.
Oh, interesting.
And then turn the conversation about obstructionism to the Democrats not doing, you know, because he's such an academically qualified candidate.
Yeah, I get where you're going with this. Well, we're just going to have to see what unfolds, Chris. I appreciate your call.
All righty.
Thanks,
all right, thanks, Chris.
That's an interesting point. It's just amazing how much you know, we put on Rove as being like this weird kind of, you know, swollen-headed mastermind that is micromanaging everything that happens in the world, which he very well might be, which is why we have to stay on him and keep trying to bring him down. There's an interesting thing going on right now, Riley, with some Democrats, some liberals, who actually want to re-regulate television. Two liberal House members have introduced a sweeping bill that would re-regulate radio and TV back to the days before the 1996 Telecommunications Act as a means to stop, basically, the Republican takeover of America's mass media. This measure would reinstate the Fairness Doctrine, reinstate a national cap on radio and on radio ownership, which is good, lower the number of radio stations a company can own in a local market, which is good. Reinstate a 25% national television ownership cap would also not...
It good. Wouldn't be bad.
Require regular public interest reports to the FCC. All this is good, but is Clear Channel going to put up with that? You can bet your life not.
It's never going to happen. See, first of all, as you point out, the Clear Channel is not the only one. If they were able to do this, if they were able to get it passed through a predominantly Republican Congress, I might add,
mm-hmm.
you would be in a situation where all of these large media companies would have to divest.
They aren't thinking about it. That's right.
Not thinking about getting rid of what they've amassed over mm-hmm. the last few years. And remember, too, that the Telecommunications Act of 1996 is just that. It happened during Bill Clinton's presidency. He signed it into law. Now, he has said publicly since 1996 and while he was president that he thinks it was a mistake and that it needed to be revisited because it had concentrated too much power in the hands of corporate media.
I think it's a nice political statement. Whether or not it's going
nice
to happen
statement.
Or not,
yeah.
It's great. Coming up, you know, please stay with us because David Cole, a professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University and the legal correspondent for The Nation magazine, is going to help us with this this court nomination. Just get it out there and do that. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, 57 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark and Mark. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Yes, I am.
My friend and co-host. We're here. We're doing the business. In a few seconds, we're going to talk to David Cole, who is a professor. A professor, my friends. That means somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about. He's a professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University. He also is the legal affairs correspondent from The Nation magazine. And we're going to get to the bottom of this nomination of Roberts, the man, the judge, John G. Roberts Jr., the new nomination that Bush put up last night at 9 o'clock in the evening to distract us from the problem in his Oval Office, right in there in his inner circle, the Roe issue. Right now, though, if you just tuning in, here's a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A toddler in Fort Wayne, Indiana, had her identity stolen twice. Did you hear that, Kalo? Twice. She only became aware her identity had been stolen when her preschool turned down her request for a Care Bear sticker. Yeah. Okay. Wait. Stay with me on this, man. I'm gonna make these bad boys work. Do you understand? The identity theft comes at a bad time for the child who recently pooped her pants.
Ooh.
In addition, some criminals say stealing the actual toddler is a great way to meet divorced moms in the park. Come on! All right. Disney has angered right to privacy activists over its use of finger scanning technology at its theme parks. If you have four fingers or you're wearing a white glove, you're registered as a cartoon character. Hey. All right, scientists believe they have found the hangover gene. Meanwhile, religious conservatives dispute the scientific findings and say that hangovers aren't genetic. They're a choice.
That's right.
You saw that one coming. Riley went ahead and tipped the punchline on that one.
Sorry.
Now the scientists say if they can just isolate the dry heaves gene, they'll be well on the way to cloning the first party animal.
Ooh.
Nothing. All right, look. There's going to be another addition to those things in a little while, and we're going to make some funny. I'm going to make a little campfire of humor.
They're already funny.
You're hilarious. I like the new haircut. I think it's much better. I'm serious. No, I'm being genuine. I actually think that it was a good choice. You're a very attractive man, and your head has a nice shape.
Thank
you hear me?
You.
Okay. Let's move on. Now that we've got that out of the way and it didn't turn into some weird, never-ending thing. Are you attracted to me, Chris? I mean, sexually?
A little bit.
All right. I just want to put that out. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. President Bush's pick for the Supreme Court is Judge John Roberts, and we're going to learn more about him right now. Our guest is a professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University and the legal affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine. He's also the author of Enemy Aliens, Double Standards and Constitutional Freedoms in the War on Terrorism. David Cole joins us on the phone now from Washington, D.C. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
David, what are we going to do? You got to tell me about this guy. First of all, how should liberals and Democrats feel about this guy? I know we lose no matter what, but is this guy one of the best things we can hope for?
Well, we do lose no matter what. I think many people who have looked at the likely candidates consider him one of the worst that we could hope for in a number of respects. One is that he is known by all who know him to be a very, very conservative person in his basic beliefs. But two is that he has virtually no record. He's only been a judge on the D.C. Circuit now for 2 years and has authored a handful of opinions, but most of them in non-controversial cases. Before that, he was a lawyer for the government, so he advocated the government's point of view, and he advocated the Bush and Reagan administration points of view because that was where he was working. But, it's hard to attack him on those grounds because, of course, he's advocating their views. And then he was a lawyer in private practice and argued 39 cases in the Supreme Court, is widely regarded as one of the two or three best Supreme Court litigators in the country. So he's extremely smart. He's also known as extremely nice. He has very little paper trail, and he's very, very conservative. So he's really, in many respects, sort of the smartest choice for President Bush. And I think we can only hope that as he grows into the job, he will be become more open to more mainstream views, as some other justices have done once they've sort of been given this kind of power.
David Cole, let me just ask you a question about his age and also the fact that he has no real history, that he is somewhat of a blank slate. Is this an unusual new sort of modern occurrence in Supreme Court nominees?
Well, I think there's definitely a desire to put young people up there so you extend your legacy as long as possible. Justice Rehnquist has been on the court now for 36 years. Justice Thomas is likely to be on the court for a very, very long time, and Justice Roberts will certainly, if he is appointed, if he's confirmed, will be on the court for a very long time. But the thing with Roberts is that this is not someone who's young and inexperienced. I mean, this is someone who has argued 39 cases in the Supreme Court, has been the number two person in the branch of the Justice Department that argues in the Supreme Court, You know, he's been a judge on the D.C. Circuit, and he is, you know, widely respected. So, you know, I think it's going to be a very tough thing for the Democrats to fight. The abortion groups have already come out against him because he has, again, as a government lawyer, argued for the overturning of Roe. But that was when he was working for President Reagan, who made that one of his principal political campaigns. So he couldn't work for Ronald Reagan without doing that. So I think it's going to be a tough one to fight.
Now, David Cole, Senator Chuck Schumer from New York, when Judge Roberts was up for the D.C. Circuit, asked him a question about the three Supreme Court decisions that he felt were wrong. And he refused to answer that question, and as a result, Senator Schumer did not vote for him. He was obviously confirmed anyway. Do you think that Senator Schumer will take that tack when it comes to the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings on Roberts for the Supreme Court?
He might. I mean, I think it depends on how strong the interest groups really sort of line people up against him, and whether people, you know, members of the Senate feel that there's any real chance at opposing him. But you know, it's quite common that particularly nominees for the Supreme Court decline to comment on the merits of any matter that could be pending before them. And so, you know, Roberts, for example, you know, everyone's going to want to know what he really thinks about the abortion issue. But there's a case that the Supreme Court has accepted cert on for next term on whether or not a law that requires parental notification for minors before obtaining an abortion is constitutional. He's going to say, I can guarantee you, he's going to say it's a pending case on abortion. I can't express my views at this point. And so I think it's going to, you know, I think this one is really one where, you know, we have to hope and pray that he is a judge who once on the court, you know, is open to more moderate points of view, because I think absent some smoking gun that someone has discovered yet, this is someone who will be the next Supreme Court justice.
Quick two-part question. Some legal scholars are saying that Judge Roberts will be good for corporate conservatives, but maybe not so good for social conservatives. Do you agree with that? And does being a great Supreme Court litigator mean that someone's qualified to sit on the court?
Well, that's a good question. Well, the first question, I don't have any indication that he is not a social conservative as well. I think he is people say he's a conservative. The people who know him say he's a conservative through and through. So I don't know on that. He is on the question of whether being a great Supreme Court litigator means you would be a great judge. Not necessarily, because being a great litigator means you're a great advocate. Being a great judge means that you have judgment. Those are two different things, but they're not totally unrelated. And to be a great Supreme Court litigator, you have to have judgment about what kinds of arguments make sense within the scope of the existing law, how far you can push the law, and the like. And I think in some sense he's scary because he's so good. This is not someone who's going to be a bumbling justice. This is someone who's going to be smart. He's going to be prepared. He's going to be able to. He's going to be persuasive. And so, you know, in some sense, he's the most dangerous kind of conservative.
So I guess we're just going to have to cross our fingers, David Cole, and hope that when Rehnquist steps down, that the next choice isn't really radical.
Oh yeah, but this is the key one, of course, because they're gonna replace Rehnquist with someone who's as conservative as Rehnquist, and they've now if they're successful here, they will have replaced O'Connor with someone who's as conservative as Rehnquist. Roberts was himself a clerk for Chief Justice Rehnquist. I think it might be the first time in which a justice and his clerk serve on the same court if he's appointed. But if they succeed here, they will have shifted the center of the court significantly, and it's going to be a tough row to hoe for liberals for a long time to come in the Supreme Court.
All right. Well,
it hasn't been a cakewalk for years.
But I'm not going to quit my job, okay?
Yeah, I wouldn't go to law school right now.
Okay. Thanks a lot, David Cole. Good talking to you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, David.
Coming up, we've got Paul Thompson, the author of The Terra Timeline. This is the most comprehensive book ever put together on the history of modern terrorism. I'll tell you that. You know, starting, you know, all the way back to the 80s. We've had him on the show before. It's been a while. He's going to talk to us about new developments. Maybe Lawton Smalls will call from Iraq.
Uh-oh.
I'm a little worried about him. It's 17 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. This is Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. One time, I was listening to Morning Sedition and Maron started riffing on the Bush administration. Then Riley came in with a slamming groove about the right wing's use of the media. Just when you thought it couldn't get any freakier, Maron broke into Scarlet Begonias. What a sick jam. Best show ever. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
This Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Look, I said it before we went on to break, and sure enough, the delivery came. A guy, a messenger, brings over a tape that I have in my hand. It's a tape from Lawton Smalls in Iraq. Chris, could you please, do we have the technology to play this?
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls. I'm still being held captive over here in Iraq. Just some good old boys, never meaning no harm. Huh? Oh, all right. Now, look, these militant insurgent boys want me to tell you that they're having a fire sale on my ransom. They've come down from $50 million to, like, what, $250? Is that right? $200.
Oh, no.
$200.
I think we can get that
together. Heck out of here. Now, that seems reasonable, so break out that piggy bank, pass the hat over there at Air America, go trick-or-treating for Lawton if you have to, but raise that do-re-mi. I need to get home and see the Dukes of Hazzard movie.
Oh,
making their way any way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. They love it when I sing. Been doing it for a solid week. I'm not tired at all. Having kind of fun, actually. One of y'all bring me some couscous and maybe a Diet Sprite. It's kind of hot in here, buddy. You think maybe you could go over there and tweak the AC a little bit? Thanks, buddy. Come on, sing with me. Making their way any way they know how.
Oh, no, man. It almost sounded like they were, like, singing. It was a groan chorus.
Yeah.
No. So our guest, our next guest, Paul Thompson, is the author of The Terror Timeline. He came in. He's been in our show a lot. One of the times he was here last time, we had a caller. And this is the kind of thing that Paul Thompson and his book brings out in our listeners. Terry on the Lower East Side, what's going on?
Hey, Terry.
Hi. I've been living in my apartment on the Lower East Side for 21 years and took the apartment because of the view of the World Trade Center and the sky gazer, just one of those nut jobs. But
yeah,
to tell the truth, I saw three phenomena within the 6 weeks before. One was a full moon, brighter than anything that had ever been down there, that sat on top of the antenna and then swung around in a spiral so that even though the Earth was going in one direction, it actually retrograded.
Whoa, Terry, back up a second.
It retrograded.
The moon moved around?
It moved around the tower.
Okay.
Number one world.
Okay.
Trade.
And what else did you see?
I saw about 3 weeks before that, three lights, one purple, one pink, one blue, beautiful lights, most beautiful colors, hovering around it.
Just hovering around the World Trade Center.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then during the day one day, I saw a small airplane flying so close to it that I can't believe that it wasn't reported to the FAA.
It might have been. I don't know. Well, you know what?
But people who were in that building must have seen something.
You mean the small plane?
There's going to be some kind of problem, there's lights from the aliens are hovering around this spacecraft mentioned.
So, yeah, and I would think certainly if the moon sort of jiggled around and swung around.
Yeah,
people,
that told me right away. And my upstairs neighbor with exactly the same view saw the same thing.
She saw the moon
and
move
she's
around.
She's a fundamentalist Christian woman, so it's not as though I'm some crazy New York Jew, you know.
That's right. No, fundamentalist Christians are definitely not crazy.
You can see the same thing as I see.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Terry.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to talk to Paul about... Now, Paul, have you got any reports that the moon moved? Well, that was, I remember that. That was a while back.
Me too.
Paul Thompson is a straight shooter, and he spent years, you know, obviously two at least, compiling this incredible tome. It is like the research guide for the timeline of terrorism going back to the late 70s, in the creation of the Bin Ladens, the creation of Al-Qaeda. We're hoping he's going to be heading down to Washington to present some information in one of these John Conyers types of hearings.
Oh, okay.
And he is going to, he's got some new information about some of the bombers in London, and he's got some new research around 9/11. It's going to be good to see him.
Well, yeah, it's going to be good to see him. But, Mark, are you trying to say that Paul Thompson engenders this kind of response in our listening audience? The towers moved, and what was the other thing about the fundamentalist Christian?
Well, no, it's just that, when you start talking about, 9/11, and you start talking about what we do and don't know, people have their own opinions about things and what caused certain things to happen. But obviously that, what she was talking about, did happen. Several weeks before.
Yeah.
So coming up next, Paul Thompson. We've also got Tony Shalhoub later in the show. Looking forward to talking to him. It is 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. This is Air America Radio.
Edition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're pleased to welcome back to the studio one of our favorite guests. He's the author of The Terror Timeline, which blows my mind every time I pick it up, which is it's the most comprehensive books on terrorism ever written, I believe, sir. Paul. He's also the founder of the Center for Cooperative Research. And welcome back to the show, Paul Thompson. Nice to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
All right, so we've got,
first of all, you're going to Washington to do some business. We're going to get to that. But we need to talk about the business that you have right in front of you. You've got new research. You've got new ideas. You've got new facts around the London bombing of July 7th. Tell me what's going on.
Okay. There have been a few reports in the recent news that haven't really made connections, but I've made some connections between what's happened with this London bombing and what happened last year around August. It was the time of the Democratic Convention, and just a couple
Democrat
days...
Democrat or Republican? The one here?
Yeah. Just,
that was
no,
a Republican.
No.
The one in Boston?
The one in Boston.
The one in Boston.
Okay.
Yeah. Democrat Convention.
Just a couple days before that, they announced this orange alert.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought that was kind of strange. Was this politically timed? What was the evidence?
Sure.
Why were they doing this? And so then they came out with some information saying, we think that there's going to be targeting of some buildings in New York. There's the financial centers. You may remember that whole story. And then it came out, I believe it was August 2nd, that there was this Al-Qaeda computer expert in Pakistan. And he'd been caught a few days before. And he was a very, very important guy because he was like a communications node.
Right.
So he was caught. He quickly turned. He quickly started cooperating. And he sent out messages to Al-Qaeda operatives all around the world saying, check in. So through this one guy, there was the potential that they could have caught people, literally hundreds of agents all around the world. And then what happened was that apparently on background, the United States, somebody within the United States, revealed his name.
Mm-hmm.
And all these Al-Qaeda operatives all of a sudden scattered because they had his name revealed and they realized that it might lead to them. Now, it turns out that on his computer he had maps of the London Underground, and there was a big operation at the time, Al-Qaeda operation, to attack London. And so the British were not warned at all that America was going to reveal this guy's name just out of the blue. And so they were starting to close in on a bunch of London bombers, and all of a sudden they pick up the New York Times and they see this guy's name, and so do many of the bombers in London and in Britain. So there's this high-speed chase. They get to some of the guys, literally car chase running through Britain. Some of them escape in time. So we have about a dozen of them are caught. Five of them get away. And I think another five of the ones that they caught, they had to release because they were just starting to learn about them and they hadn't collected enough information.
This is last August after they found out the name of the Pakistani guy who had the computer, who was, I guess, a communication center for Al-Qaeda. What was his job specifically, this Pakistani operative?
He was kind of a hacker. He was considered a computer genius and had all kinds of skills. And so he was in a very trusted position. And actually, some people said at the time, some terror experts, that this could have led all the way to bin Laden himself. When he said, let's check in, you know, that even bin Laden could have checked in and they could have found out where he was. Now, how this ties into the London bombing is it turns out that these people that were running around Britain that were in the high-speed chase that were connected to this plot, they had ties to some of the London bombers. And in particular, two of the London bombers may have had connections with these people that they tried to catch last year. So presumably, had they continued to widen their investigation, have more people call in, they could have caught and found evidence against the people who were in this London bombing.
Well, who leaked that name?
That's a very good question. Now, Condoleezza Rice said to Wolf Blitzer at the time on CNN that someone within the U.S. government had leaked it on background to reporters.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, it's very, very questionable.
So wait, Paul, you're saying that if this came out of the Oval Office, if this was leaked information, primarily it would serve to keep the war going on. That, you know, any time that they let these guys go on some level, and especially with Britain's involvement, that this could actually be part of the same sort of the same cabal of secrecy and the same agenda as would you know, as the Rove leak.
Yeah. I see a similarity between this and the whole Joseph Wilson thing. I mean, I've got one quote here from a computer or security terrorism expert. He says, quote, the whole thing smacks of either incompetence or worse. You have to ask, what are they doing compromising a deep mole within Al-Qaeda when it's so difficult to get these guys in there in the first place? It goes against all the rules of counter-espionage, counter-terrorism, running agents, and so forth.
Mm. Wow.
That's incredible. Now, Paul, are you saying that the Egyptian guy, who I think they busted in Egypt, did they not? Are you saying that the Egyptian guy who has been publicly named as the mastermind of the London attacks, could he have been caught last year? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not sure about him. However, there's another guy called Zeeshan Siddiq, and he was just arrested a few days ago in Pakistan, and he has ties to the London bombing. And here's an article that says he had ties to the plot that was broken up last August with this orange alert and revealing of this guy's name. And then in addition, two of the actual London bombers who apparently killed themselves also had ties with that plot back in August.
Well, what becomes clear, Paul, if I'm not mistaken, is that the Muslim community in England is much more deeper rooted than our community. There's 1.6 million Muslims in England, which is a smaller country, and their assumption is that probably up to 16,000, if that's possible, are somehow involved or connected to some sort of activity that could be deemed as terroristic.
Right, but how do you know out of all those people which ones are the serious ones or which ones are not? Here we had this mole within Al-Qaeda. He's turned, he's cooperating, mm-hmm. and he's getting everybody. He's wrapping
up. He was
up
a portal.
Yeah, he's like a portal. And then here's a really ironic quote from Tom Ridge. It was about a month after all this happened. He said, I know there was the regrettable disclosure of information that British officials would have much preferred to remain confidential. As it turned out, all's well that ends well.
What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, really.
Well, things certainly didn't end well.
And I want you people out there to know that what Paul does is not, this is not, it's not theorizing, it's speculative. I mean, Paul, you know, he sources all of his facts in the book, and he's very careful to do that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this is all coming from the mainstream, but I've been watching the papers in the past week, And nobody has really drawn these connections. In the blog world, there are a lot of people on the internet now who are saying, look at this.
Right.
This is really amazing, this release of information for seemingly just political purposes to justify an orange alert. You give up turning over the names of, you know, the one expert here said possibly hundreds of Al-Qaeda operative names.
But there was no reason to give out his name just to justify the alert. They were putting alerts up just because somebody made a series of phone calls. So, I mean, you know, the idea that the name was leaked just to justify the alert doesn't really wash. The idea that the name was leaked to sabotage a terror investigation in England for political reasons, that's even more demonic and devious.
It could be, yes. You could speculate that.
You know, when we talk about Pakistan, because, you know, the three of the four London bombers that they've identified are of Pakistani descent. We know that in the most general sense, bin Laden is either in Pakistan or Afghanistan, somewhere near the border. How do you parse the question of whether Pakistan is in fact a U.S. ally? We're constantly told that Pakistan is, but I mean, is Pakistan simultaneously our ally and a friend of Al Qaeda?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that, because about a month earlier than all of this, there was another story came out about two supposed Al Qaeda sleeper agents who were caught in Lodi, California, this middle of nowhere California town. And the affidavit that the U.S. government put out on these guys after they caught them said that it was a father and son team, and that the son had been training in an Al-Qaeda terror camp in Pakistan. And Newsweek and some other sources went on to say that the U.S. has known about this camp for years. And not only that, but there are literally hundreds of other Al-Qaeda training camps in Pakistan that the Pakistani government knows about and turns a blind eye to, and the U.S. government knows about a lot of them and turns a blind eye to them, too. And you could say, well, why on earth would they do this? And the logic of it, if you could call it logic, is that there's been this ongoing war between Pakistan and India in Kashmir, this disputed region, and Pakistan is always allowing the training of terrorists to go off and fight in Kashmir. But the problem is the same terror camps that are being used to train and send people off to Kashmir are also being used by Al-Qaeda and by other groups to send them elsewhere. In fact, this one guy who was caught in Lodi, he said that, you know, when he was in this training camp, he would be training with weapons, and they would have targets, you know, like in a rifle range with pictures of Bush and other leaders. And when they were trained, then they could get a choice. What country do you want to go and commit a terror act in? You can go to Kashmir, you can go to Israel, you can go to the U.S.
Get out
Britain.
Of here. So they had a disc, like, you know, a choice of assignments?
Yeah. Just pick your favorite country.
That's mind-blowing. So, Paul, before we run out of time, quickly, can you tell us what you're going to be doing in Washington?
Right. Well, there's a few events coming up. On this Friday, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney is running a congressional briefing, which isn't exactly like a congressional hearing, but it's like a Democratic version of that. I'm going to be speaking at that twice, and there's going to be a number of other experts and 9/11 relatives and all kinds of people. It's going to be an all-day event.
Well, that's great. Is there a revised edition of the book in the works?
Not yet, but I also want to mention there's going to be a second series of events that are tied to that, and then also the Downing Street memo and a bunch of other depleted uranium concerns, war veterans concerns, and that's you can go to a website called truthemergency.us to find more information about that. And that's going to be a more public event where there's going to be some speeches and rallies on Saturday.
Truthemergency.us.
Yeah.
Okay. Paul Thompson, always mind-blowing to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us.
Glad you stopped by. Hope you stop by again.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot. 46 past the hour. We'll be back with the War on Brains. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition's, what is it? It's Morning Sedition's Air America program. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Don't look at me like that. I know you're here. We're going to get on with it. I love you, man. And I'll tell you who I'm talking to in just a second. Now that my brain has been torn open, I've got a hole punctured into my ability to think properly, and I see the gaping window in my head that's sort of like, all things are connected, and it's Satan's face. Now, see, that's what's happened with Paul Thompson, so now I've got to deal with that. And but fortunately, we have our guy here, Mort. Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains, of course, is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., latitude 38.88 degrees north, longitude 77.3 degrees west. Uh-oh, I've already said too much. My friends, this month the sovereign territory of reason awoke to the terrifying specter of two hulking maniacs seeking to liberate science from the realm of human thought. No, not Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes, but the Republican Congressman
Come on.
Joe Barton of Texas and Edward Whitfield of Kentucky. Their real occupations? Suckling at the withered teats of big oil in the trucking industry and making sure vets receive fair benefits. Hey, nobody's all bad, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway, in a move that can only be described as threatening and intimidating, these troglodytic Struthians are now threatening and intimidating scientists into changing their findings on global warming to please the Bush administration. Just last month, Barton and Whitfield. Sounds kind of like a wine cooler, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Barton and Whitfield.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to give me some Barton and Whitfield.
Barton and Whitfield, grape surprise.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, it's my bit, all
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah, good.
Barton and Whitfield sent official letters to researchers and the National Science Foundation commanding them to hand over detailed documentation on hundreds of global warming studies going back decades. A clever ploy, certainly meant to frighten scientists, if not cripple them with thousands of paper cuts. One letter reads thusly: to Michael E. Mann, University of Virginia Assistant Professor of Environmental Sciences and potential Abu Ghraib inmate. Pursuant to Rules 10 and 11 of the U.S. House of Representatives, please provide the following information requested below. 1. A location of all data archives relating to global warming and rising ocean levels for which you were an author or co-author, including but not limited to your high school diaries, clay handprints you made in kindergarten, and any childhood thoughts on the gas and oil industries your mother may have saved in scrapbooks. 2. Any photos of you taken with little boys we might be able to use against you if nothing else works. In addition, it's imperative our committee know exactly what time you leave the house to go to work and whether or not you have a real big dog. If you do have a real big dog, it's imperative we know what time he leaves the house to go pee-pee. And most importantly, we will also need a full 7-year detailed account of the mating habits of the rare Drygalski ice shelf penguin.
What?
Particularly the one who goes by the name of Tux. Please have this on my desk in 18 days or the House of Representatives Energy and Commerce Committee will officially accuse you of plotting to kill God. Yours sincerely, two congressmen from Texas and Kentucky, a couple of crappy states that ironically could really benefit from a lot of flooding. Oh. Well, there you have it. Not since the Catholic Church persecuted Galileo Galilei for proving conclusively that there were indeed two scoops of raisins in every box of Post Raisin Bran has the realm of deductive reasoning been attacked so viciously. As a matter of fact, this whole thing is so depressing I can't even come up with a decent ending, Mark.
All right.
Except to say this. How about that whole Harry Potter thing, huh?
Yeah, right.
That's why that thing's popular.
That's crazy.
Who or what?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. Barton and Whitfield. Sounds like a wine cooler.
Tasty. Bubbly.
And that's today's best of the... Boy, that's a horrible haircut, Kalo.
Hey.
And that's today's... Shut up, Riley.
Hey, bite me.
Again? And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
Now, speaking of again, Mr. Correspondent.
Wait, hold it. You so soon?
Yeah, me so soon. How many times have you used the term withered teats in one of these missives of yours?
I'll tell you.
Oh, I know. Can we get a researcher on that?
Yes. You know, I need a researcher because, like, this little wine cooler thing you did with me, you know, that fun thing where you snapped at me and hurt my feelings because I thought we were bonding for a minute. But
all of a sudden, you're vulnerable.
Yeah, a little bit. You know I am. Why? I'm going to cry. No, I was trying to remember those ones that I drank when I was in high school. Were they T.J. Swan? Does that ring a bell to anybody? T.J. Swan wine coolers? One of them was called, like, Easy Nights. They had all these weird names, and we used to, when I was, like, 14, we used to get people to buy them for us because they were easy to drink. That's all I'm talking about. What's up, Jim? Nice to see you.
T.J. Swans was the name of the guy's house you used to go to.
Maybe it is. I'm getting confused, but I found myself trying to think about that while I was being, you know, lulled to sleep by your bit.
Ooh.
But
at the And you thought Kalo's haircut looked bad.
Hey, no,
yeah, I can't have jokes for every paragraph. Some of these stories are very, very hard. You ought to read one sometime.
Yeah.
By the way, I was, you know, taken aback by that huge picture of your face on the wall next to the...
Someone gave it to us.
Your manager.
I hope
he or she is getting more than 30%.
I wanted...
he or she is certainly earning her job.
Okay, are we even now?
Not even yet. Screwball. Funny pants?
Funny pants.
What I was going to say, Jim, is I wanted to thank your lovely your significant other for the tub of enchilada sauce, which is very tasty, by the way.
Oh,
you tell
some?
Her that. I did have some.
Oh, that's great.
I had to add a little salt, but aside from that, the cilantro, the tomatoes, the onions, very nice. Like a salsa it was.
Maybe Gypsy can send you some more recipes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Jim. It's nice to see you, as always.
Whatever.
We've got Tony Shalhoub coming in the next hour.
That'll be better than Jim, right?
No. Nah. Jim's hilarious.
No.
And he's a genius.
Riley!
He's a
genius?
Riley!
Iron that shirt.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait, yeah. We got somebody else, Future Mark, on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We've been here all morning. How do you like that?
Yeah.
Getting all jacked up on coffee and soy milk. I've got some concerns about the soy milk. Do I have to get into that right now? I don't talk about myself as much as I used to, but I'll tell you something. Someone told me there's estrogen in soy milk. Do these look bigger than you? Do they look bigger to you? A little bit? They do?
Yeah,
all right. Well, maybe I ought to be concerned. Maybe I'm moving towards something I never thought I would. Maybe my future lies in being a woman. Is that possible? Maybe it is. Hey, folks, we'll be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnston, the singer-songwriter, will be with us to play some music. We'll be giving away some free stuff. Johnny K Street and Milf Cardinal Milfington are going to stop by. It's going to be at the Tea Lounge again in Park Slope, Brooklyn, on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. That's this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Be there. It's going to be fun. It was very fun the last time we were there, right, Riley?
Absolutely.
Also, folks, what is this? Morning's Edition will be heard as part of HBO 6 Feet Under this Sunday night. Check it out. I got to check it out. Who the hell knew?
Yeah.
Is it my voice on there? Yeah? Oh, wow. It's that Pashman's giving me the mouthful of food. Yes. How come I'm the only one not eating here? What are you eating, Kalo? What'd you just have a mouthful of?
A nice granola bar.
You had a granola bar. Okay. Pashman's got one of his series of wraps. Pashman shows up with, like, the six-pack of handmade wraps.
Well, he has, like, one for every day of the week. He comes in on Monday. He's got them for the rest of the week. He keeps them downstairs in the refrigerator.
No, but he eats, like, seven a day. You don't keep those in the refrigerator for more than 2 days. I don't think he does. No, you know, 3 days is the max on that.
Oh, 3 days. Yeah. Is there like a date stamp
on it? Yeah, the Pashman stamp. It's a little shaved head of Dan Pashman with a date next to it.
That he eats by.
Yeah. I will be at Gotham Comedy Club this Friday and Saturday for all their shows if you want to come see me, or at least the first and second show. I'm not pressuring you. As I said before, if you feel like it, come on down. What else we got? Well, we've got, I'll tell you what we've got. Let's get into the news. We've got a Supreme Court nominee and Judge John G. Roberts, Jr. This guy sits on the U.S. Courts of Appeals for the District of Columbia. He was nominated by George W. Bush for that post, and he became that guy only after a very protracted confirmation fight. Now, folks, you got to realize, if you're listening to this network for the right reasons, that either way we lose. Doesn't matter who it's going to be. There's not going to be any liberals. There's not going to be any Democrats. These guys guys are going to be Republicans. They're going to be worse Republicans than the other, but that's what we're going to get. We lost this fight in November, folks. The right will now control all three branches of government. But who is this guy? This is a guy that was part of the George H.W. Bush administration in the way that he was a principal deputy solicitor general in the Department of Justice during that time. He also was an associate counsel to President Reagan. He's a Republican Party operative, but he's no dummy.
No, he's no dummy. He was also deputy solicitor general under Solicitor General Kenneth Starr. You may remember the name. He's the one that went after Bill Clinton and wasted a whole bunch of taxpayer dollars. He's a Harvard College and Harvard Law School graduate, finished Harvard College in 3 years, which, of course, impresses everyone inside the Beltway. He's an insider. He is a consummate insider. Now, earlier we spoke to David Cole, a professor from Georgetown and with The Nation magazine, who said that he believes that Roberts is both a social and corporate conservative. Not everyone agrees with that. There's a guy by the name of John Yoo, who's a law professor at Cal Berkeley, a conservative law professor at Cal Berkeley, who says that an insider like John Roberts is never going to be confused with a revolutionary. Beltway insiders are generally not revolutionaries. And he says he's the type of person that business conservatives and judicial restraint conservatives will like, but the social conservatives may not like. What the social conservatives, of course, want is someone that will overturn Roe v. Wade. Yu says he represents the Washington establishment. These establishment people are not revolutionaries, and they're not out to shake up constitutional law. They might make course corrections, but they're not trying to sail the boat into a different port.
Let's talk about this legal brief that was filed by the government in 1990 in the administration of the first President Bush in the case of Russ versus Sullivan. It bore the names of nine government lawyers, including Judge John Roberts. And I'll quote from that brief, quote, "We continue to believe that Roe was wrongly decided and should be overruled. The court's conclusions in Roe that there is a fundamental right to an abortion and that government has no compelling interest in protecting prenatal human life throughout pregnancy find no support in the text, structure, or history of the Constitution," end quote. Now, as David Cole said, our constitutional professor, as he said, this might have been because he was working for George H.W. Bush. And before that, he was working for Reagan. This was the party line, but it's a pretty extreme party line. And if I were looking at that, Riley, I'd say that the social conservatives can pretty much bank on this guy doing whatever's necessary to overturn Roe v. Wade.
But see, here's the interesting thing, Mark. If you look back on Roe v. Wade, recent attacks on Roe v. Wade, the court has usually ruled 6-3. In favor of upholding Roe v. Wade. What that means is Roberts alone is not enough. He gets on, it may end up being 5-4, but then that second pick, assuming Rehnquist either retires or dies, the second pick will be the pick that could swing it 5-4 in the opposite direction.
Oh, my God. It's going to be a rough 30 years, people. Look, and this guy also is Roberts. This Judge Roberts issued a dissent that challenged the constitutionality of the Endangered Species Act. You know, he's a guy that seeks to severely limit congressional authority to protect the environment. He is a corporate sympathizer. He is part of the corporatocracy, and we're not going to spend all day on it because this is going to be news for a while. These confirmation hearings are probably not going to happen until the end of August or into September, and the reason that Bush nominated him in the middle of the night last night at 8 o'clock at night, not the middle of the night, but you know, he rushed the nomination, was to distract us all from the fact that within just down the hall from where he was announcing his nomination, just down the hall, he's got big problems. The neocon death cult, the cabal that owns and operates George W. Bush, has big problems because there is a gaping crack in their secret, covert plan to coerce and bully anybody who was going to fight with their decision to go to war in Iraq in 1995. All right, this Karl Rove thing is for real. Karl Rove is a traitor. He compromised national security. That's for real. Whether or not that policy of covert, aggression, vengeance, bullying, and just, you know, fighting anybody who was willing to tell the truth about why we went to war in Iraq, and that being all lies, Whether that goes all the way to Bush is obvious to me. It does. Does it go to Cheney? It does. Is Karl Rove guilty? He is. Is Rumsfeld guilty? He is also. Is Wolfowitz and Pearl the designers of the deal for the new American century? Are all those guys guilty of taking over our country? Yes.
Well, and they have taken over our country. Make no mistake about it. And they've done so with the knowledge and acquiescence of George W. Bush. That I don't know nothing defense that he tried to use the other day will not wash. He is the president of the United States. He's not a janitor. He's not somebody that's changing bedpans somewhere. He is the one that shapes the policy. He is the one that I would assume would want to know exactly what's being done in his name. And make no mistake, the outing of Valerie Plame was done in the name of this administration.
And you listen to Bill O'Reilly. You listen to these dummies on the other side who just sit there and go, the American people don't care. Really, they don't care that they were lied to and that we're involved in a war that's depleting the country of human lives. It's killing people in our name, and it's also depleting the government of all its money. I mean, they don't care that the president lied to them. The polls are not showing that. 53% of those polled said that they are following the issue closely. 73% call it a serious matter. And not only that, doubts about the administration's cooperation have been jumping from 47% in 2003 at the beginning of this thing. Believing that the White House was cooperating to 39% a few weeks after, and now 25% as of yesterday believe that the White House is cooperating. That means 75% of the people in this country are like, hey, you know, there's something wrong here. If the president can't take it into his own hands to resolve his own problems in his own house, and he has to lie to the American people and say, we got to wait for the investigator to find out the truth, something is deeply wrong. He's covering up for the people that own him. All right, we're going to get on with it. We're going to have Tony Shalhoub up here to lighten things up. He's going to be on the phone in a few minutes, so stay with us. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 20 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
What's going on?
Yo.
Yes.
I'm sorry to bother you, man, but Future Mark is on line one.
Hey, buddy, what's
hey,
up?
What's up?
So, Future Mark, why are you calling? And when are you calling from?
It's 2150, dude. Why am I calling? Well, Future Mark got in some trouble, and he asked me to call you instead.
Oh, man, what happened?
I kind of had to rat him out.
Oh, man, really?
Uh-huh.
You had to rat him out?
Yeah, well, it's no big deal, especially these days. Besides, I had a quota to meet. Future Mark was there, so I told the cops he did something.
No.
The important thing is, I met my quota.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You have to meet a quota for ratting people out?
Exactly. You know how your President Bush talked about ownership society?
Yeah.
Well, when everyone just stopped pretending and Karl Rove became president forever, he instituted what he called the Informer Society.
Rove? President forever?
Yeah.
Informer society?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, no. What's that?
It's the informant patrol, man. This is the morning rush. A lot of people like to meet their snitching quota before work. That way they don't have to think about it for the rest of the day.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So everybody's a stoolie because we weren't able to bring Rove down in 2005?
Yeah, basically. And that's not all. Rove's president of the world, man. He cloned himself, entered every election across the globe, rigged the votes, and won them all.
Oh, my God. That's so believable.
Ah, crap. That's me. One of the neighbors must have ratted me out. I gotta go find out what I did, Mark. I'll talk to you later.
Oh, man. Rove is president. And everyone's informing on each other? Wow. Yeah.
Future Mark is online, too.
Right, now, regular Future Mark? All right, put him on. Busy day here. Hey, buddy, what's
hey,
up?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Future Mark, I thought you were being detained because Future Mark ratted you out to meet his Rove quota.
What? When did this happen?
I was just on the phone with him. It was the year 2150.
Oh, man, I'm calling from 2050. That little weasel. We made a bargain not to rat on each other. Are you telling me he dropped a dime on me?
Evidently, dude. He didn't seem too torn up about it either.
That tiny bastard.
So, did you have to go to jail in the future? I mean, will you?
No, it's more of a nuisance. They interrogate you for about 5 minutes. You cop to what you were accused of. They put a little blurb in Time magazine, and you're free to go.
All right, wait a minute, Future Mark. Future Mark told me that Karl Rove became president forever. Tell me that's not true, man.
Well, nothing's forever, Mark. He's only been president for about 145 years, but so far it's true.
Hey, Mark. Sorry about the Future Mark is back on line one.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, buddy, why'd you rat me out?
Oh, come on, man. Don't be pissed.
Hey, Mark, we gotta go. I got some miniaturized ass to kick here.
Oh, big tough guy, huh? Gonna kick my ass.
Hey.
You and what army?
Hey, why don't you guys call me back when you figure this out?
Freak.
You're the freak, Jumbo.
Insect. Hey, Mark, here's your advice. Never make a deal with a little rat.
Oh, that's a good one. Real clever.
Okay, that's enough. Bye, guys.
Oh, wow.
I get confused, man. That was like a conference call with me. Man, what is that about? I enjoy talking to any version of me in the future because, you know, it's all about me. Folks, we'll be returning to Parkswell, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnson will be there to play some live music. We'll be giving away a bunch of free stuff. You know the score. Johnny K Street will be down there. The Cardinal will be down there. That'll be at the Tea Lounge in Parkswell, Brooklyn on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. That's this Friday at 6 to 9 a.m., you know, the time we shoot the show.
Is that, we shoot the show?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm on TV now.
Oh, anyway, okay.
I'm on TV in my head.
Speaking of shooting the show.
Why? What
you
do you
heard about
there?
This thing in Times Square over here in New York?
I did hear about that.
Live models, 24-hour party?
How do you like that?
Billboard?
How do you like that? They're making a living billboard. I guess what they're doing is 40 models are going to live on the side of a building, I guess, like pigeons.
Yeah.
You know, only that it's going to be a much nicer nest, and hopefully their droppings won't fall right onto people's heads. But 40... They're going to be just suspended up there on the side of this living billboard, a Calvin Klein billboard.
Yeah.
And I guess 40 models are going to be coming in and out, and they're supposed to just be up there acting like it's a never-ending party.
Why don't we send Dave and Anthony over there, our two giant friends?
The two Goliaths? Goliath and little Goliath?
Yeah, let them chase the models around the billboard.
Our huge interns?
Yeah.
All right. But here's the weird thing, is that they've been told that they are not to drink. Or perform risque behavior in the
models
net.
Drink no.
Well, how are you going to have a 24-hour party? How long is this going to go on for if they can't drink? And you know, one of them is going to go like, you know, come on, let's just do it. Let's just do it. I mean, it's dark out. Who's going to see it? It's going to happen.
Yeah, put it in a paper bag, man. Nobody knows. They think it's root beer.
I was talking about the other thing. I think that there's going to be some risque behavior. I don't know what
all that kind of thing.
Well, it's sort of coded here. They're saying, you know, no risque behavior. Does that mean that they should they need to use condoms if they're going to be doing any of that? I don't know, but whatever the case is, they're going to be suspended in some sort of IKEA nest up on the side of a building for Calvin Klein.
Well, that, warms the cockles of my heart. I hope their boyfriends enjoy it.
Here's another thing. One out of 200 registered 1999 Acura Integras were stolen last year. It was the most highly stolen car in 2004. I didn't realize this. They always sort of catch my eye, those cars. But the reason...
What, the 99 Integra?
Just Integras in general.
Oh, okay.
Because it's always one of those cars where I'm like, wow, what is that? And it's like, oh, it's an Integra. Because they're kind of sporty looking, if I'm recalling correctly. But apparently people steal them for the engines because they got these fast little engines. It's all about chop shops now. And I almost bought a car from a chop shop. You got to be careful. A lot of times that, because you don't know it. You don't know it. I was looking to buy a small car, and some guy calls me up and goes, well, I've had this Hyundai for a couple of years. I just wanted to have one I could trash around Queens and, you know, run errands with. And the guy shows up saying it was his car, all right? The odometer reading is...
3 miles.
Yes, exactly. The registration...
1986.
But doesn't... Exactly. And it doesn't match the name. The name on the registration doesn't
Vishnu.
Match. Right. Exactly. There were so many things that were wrong with this. And the guy's like, look, that's my car.
Is there a problem? It's my car.
I've had the car forever. And the guy weighed like 400 pounds. It was a Hyundai. I'm like, you couldn't have had this car that long, buddy. You know what I mean? You know when you see somebody driving a car, you're like, that guy doesn't fit in that car. And there's no way that that's his car.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you know what's going on here with these chop shops, Mark? Mm. A 2000 Honda Accord cost a little over $22,000 when it was brand new. You know how much the parts can get?
How much?
$68,000.
I have a Honda Accord.
Do you have a Honda Accord?
The reason that is, Riley, is because Honda parts are interchangeable and they have not changed their parts. They're evergreen in a certain sense. That the parts will always apply. That's why they're such. That's why you got to worry about Hondas too.
Really?
Yeah, because they'll just take it for the parts because the parts last forever. You know, there's no.
Yeah, and they're interchangeable year to year. Then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a problem.
That's a deal. That's a consistency. That's what makes them so popular.
I got a Honda.
Tony Shalhoub is going to be on the phone with us. After this break, we're going to talk to him a little bit about hopefully nominating for an Emmy.
Yeah.
Yep. And after that, we got Lawton Smalls' latest hostage tape. So stay with us here. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. Look, if you didn't know it, Judge John G. Roberts Jr. is the Supreme Court nominee. He's 50 years old. He is definitely a conservative. He is definitely, has with other people in a brief in 1990 said that he would, overturn Roe v. Wade if he had the opportunity. But then he was working for George H.W. Bush. He was also at one time worked for Ronald Reagan. He was a principal deputy solicitor general in the Department of Justice during H.W. Bush's term. He worked under, as Riley pointed out earlier, Ken Starr. He actually issued a dissent that challenged the constitutionality of the Endangered Species Act. This guy's not a good guy, but that's what we get. Either way, we're going to lose. Is he going to go through? I don't know. Why did he nominate him last night? Why the rush? So he wouldn't think about Karl Rove anymore. But you know what? It's not going away. Bush can't hide.
No, he can't. He can run, but he can't hide.
So, we're going to stay on top of that. This judge, the nomination hearings will take place at the end of August, maybe into September. But that's going to be there. The nomination is done. So now, starting tomorrow, starting later today, we get back to Rove and get back to the fact that the president actually said in front of America that, well, we'll get to the bottom of this when the investigator does, as opposed to walk down the hall, act like a leader, clean up his own house. He can't because he's owned by the neocon death cult, the cabal that performed the coup d'etat that wanted to go to Iraq since 1995 and did whatever was necessary to get there. That's what this is about. This is about not only lies in the White House, it's about lies that are taking lives in Iraq.
Absolutely.
We are thrilled to have on the phone right now an Emmy Award-winning actor. Yeah, you know him from the TV show Wings and from roles in films like Men in Black, Barton Fink, and Spy Kids. He just got another Emmy nomination last week for his portrayal of the obsessive-compulsive detective Monk, which is now in its fourth season on the USA Network. Welcome to the show, Tony Shalhoub. Good morning.
Good morning, you guys. How are you?
Good morning.
We're great.
I'm so happy to be on your show. I love you guys. I love Air America.
Well, thank you. Maybe we should start with a sort of Air America type question. You're acting and co-producing in a post 9/11 film called American East about Arab Americans. What can you tell us about that, Tony?
Oh, where do I start? I've been trying for a number of years to get people in the Arab American community to get their stories told, and there's so many great actors, directors, filmmakers, writers who are having a difficult time right now getting projects off the ground. It's going to be shot all in Los Angeles. It takes place in Los Angeles in the sort of Arab American community. I would say it's kind of a dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of takes a look at the experience of the Arab Americans since 9/11 and what they've all been going through.
That's interesting.
It's a really nice story.
And where's what's your background? Where's your family originally from?
My dad was born in Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
and my mother's family was also from Lebanon, and then I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Don't ask me how they ended up there.
Tony Shalhoub, Monk is now the highest. I just saw this on the internet the other day. Monk is the highest rated show on basic cable. You got more viewers than anyone else on basic cable. Was this something that built over time, or did it really kind of jump off that way?
Talk about your dubious achievements. I think it started out pretty strong. It was kind of one of these shows that sort of under the radar maybe the first season and caught on by word of mouth. Then there were a couple of award nominations and stuff that drew more attention to it. It's rare, though, that a show in its fourth season, builds in numbers.
They ran it on ABC a few times, as I recall, and then they moved it to USA Network, where it's found an amazing amount of of success. I imagine you probably have a little more freedom over there and less pressure than say, an ABC.
Well, that's how it feels. You know, I kind of like the landscape over in cable. It just feels like you just have more support. You feel more like a big fish in a smaller pond,
yeah,
so to speak. But also, you know, they take really good care of us. The USA has fewer.
They're just happier there, Tony.
I'm happy.
You know, what's funny, Tony, is I actually, before I got this gig, you know, I did stand-up comedy for years, and I auditioned for Monk. For the role that you have. I guess you were still deciding whether to do it or not. And, you know, I'm not anybody really in the acting world, but you know what they do is they take people like me when people like you are waiting to make a decision, and they just use us to make you, you know, to make
pressure
you...
on me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I guess I thank you then.
I didn't do
thank
that great.
Thank you for being cannon fodder.
I didn't do that great in audition. When I see you in the show, it's a tremendous character for you, and I just think you know, after watching your movies for so many years and being a tremendous fan of certainly of Barton Fink, just your ability to quirkerize or to make a character quirky, this seems to be the character for you.
It's the ultimate quirkness. Yes, I've been challenged by this part. I sort of feel like I'm in a constant state of discovery with this character. We always seem to be finding new things about him that, you know, things that distract him or preoccupy him, and also we're also finding things that, you know, that Monk can do that drive other people crazy. I love being annoying to other people. But I think there's also that we pride ourselves on being a really low-tech show. You know, we're not going to try and compete on the, you know, with the CSI and those kind of shows that where it's all kind of technical and wizardry and all of that.
I've noticed you've worn the same jacket on many episodes.
We are super low tech. I mean, you know, I have a kind of a policy too that I don't like to have, for example, computers on our show. I have this thing about them. It's like a pet peeve of mine. You know, I think we have too many computers in TV and movies right now. You know, if I see one more shot in a movie or television show where someone's clackety clacking at a keyboard and images are going on a monitor, I just want to shoot myself. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's boring and undramatic, and it's like filler. It takes away from the acting. It does, you know, there are if a computer can solve a crime, then. Isn't that kind of easy? I mean, isn't it better for a brain to solve a crime?
Yeah, I don't know. You better be careful. You're gonna make actors obsolete. Someone is gonna be listening to this, going, "Oh, that's perfect. We'll just have a computer. We don't need an actor." Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't like taken a camera and zoomed into your ear as the character and maybe shot the thought processes as you get frightened of something.
Well, that would be a CSI move. but again, you know, we're. We don't go in, you know, even a magnifying glass is too high-tech for us. You know
okay.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Tony, one of the, I guess, recurring situations in Monk is the fact that your character's wife was murdered, and that murder still hasn't been solved. Do you want to see it solved?
Well, I don't want to see it solved too quickly. I like the way that we kind of add in another piece of the puzzle every 10 or 11 shows. We try and sprinkle in another clue or another element of that, but I like the idea that it's as brilliant as Monk is. It's the one crime he cannot figure out because he's just sort of too emotionally, you know, into it. He's too locked by it. You
mm-hmm.
know, it always evades him in a way, eludes him.
Yeah.
I don't want this guy to get too, you know, I don't want him to get too much better too quickly, if you know what I mean.
Sure. So you're not going to stop doing movies, right?
No. That's the beauty of doing this schedule on USA, this cable schedule. We do 16 episodes a year, but we do them in two segments. So I shoot 9, for example, and then they give me a couple months off in the summer, and then I start again in the fall, and then we do 7 more, and then I have about a 4-month hiatus, and that affords me time to do, you know, a film project or a play or something like that. So it just couldn't be sweeter.
Well, tremendous.
It also gives me time with my family.
Tremendous. We're looking forward to more episodes of Monk. We're looking forward to the American East Project. I like seeing you in any medium. I think you're terrific.
Thanks, you guys. And keep up the great work.
Well, we're glad you're a fan. Next time you're in New York, maybe you can stop by the studio and hang out with us for a little while.
Yeah, please.
I would love to do that.
Tony Shalhoub, thank you very much. The new season of Monk is airing Friday nights on USA and Network. What a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope next time he comes in. I like. There was something wrong with that phone line.
Yeah,
did you hear
bit.
It? So, look, folks, we're going to be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday at the Tea Lounge. So come on down. That's on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues this Friday, obviously, from 6 to 9 a.m. It's a great room.
It's a great space. You can come down. You can hang out. The last time we were there, the place was full.
Freddie Johnson's coming down. He's going to play some songs. I haven't heard from that guy in a while. When we continue this conversation in just a few minutes, we're going to hear from, we did receive another tape from Lawton Smalls.
Yeah.
A hostage situation going on in Iraq, but it doesn't sound as bad as you would think. So we will play that for you. We are also going to do the Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
And also, there's an interesting thing about if you like to drink and you have a hangover issue, there might be some hope on the horizon so you can maintain your alcoholism without not drinking. It's 44 past the hour. We'll be back in a second. It's Mark and Mark in the morning here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, we're not going to crash it. It's 49 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
You.
We are here doing what we do every morning for you people. Glad to do it. Glad to do it. Feeling pretty good. My ears just kind of closed up. Isn't that weird?
Really?
I don't even know what. Maybe I got these headphones on too loud. Maybe it's too much iPodding. Maybe I got pod brain. I'm a pod zombie with pod brain. I don't know, man. They're just like, they're a little clogged up out of nowhere. Folks, we did receive another package from Iraq today containing another tape, a dispatch from Lawton Smalls, our Planet Bush correspondent, who, as you recall last week, was apparently taken hostage by, I don't know if they were insurgents or just, they seem to be just, you know, entrepreneurs in the evil way where they're just ransoming and looking for money, looking to sell Lawton. And as you'll hear in this dispatch, it's not going well.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls. I'm still being held captive over here in Iraq. Just some good old boys.
Good.
Never meaning no harm.
Oh, no,
huh?
No.
Oh, all right. Now, look, these militant insurgent boys want me to tell you that they're having a fire sale on my ransom. They've come down from $50 million to, like, what, $250? Is that right? $200. $200 just to get me the heck out of here. Now, that seems reasonable, so break out that piggy bank, pass the hat over there at Air America, go trick-or-treating for Lawton if you have to, but raise that do-re-mi. I need to get home and see the Dukes of Hazzard movie. Making their way any way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. They love it when I say it. Been doing it for a solid week. I'm not tired at all. Having kind of fun, actually. If one of y'all bring me some couscous and maybe a Diet Sprite. It's getting kind of hot in here, buddy. You think maybe you could go over there and tweak the AC a little bit? Thanks, buddy. Come on, sing with me. Making their way any way they know how.
You know, I really never wanted to have a moment where I felt sympathy for the insurgents, but there, I actually think I just had that moment.
You know? I think so.
And I like that Lawton. Really, he's got he's singing in a way. Usually, he only sings when he cries, but like when he actually puts his heart behind it, he's got a little performer in him. That
got a little
guy.
Merle Haggard in him.
Yeah, there's something a little kick to it. Hey, but let's change gears here and be honest about Iraq and why this Karl Rove leaking Valerie Plame's name is so important, despite what Bill O'Reilly says that people just don't care. They do care. They do care that their president lied to them. They do care that the guy that runs their president is this devious, weird, cavefish-looking dude that apparently micromanages everything. There is a covert policy in place on behalf of the neocon death cult and Karl Rove that went out of its way to bully anybody, coerce anybody out of, disturbing their lies, which were the justification for them to go into Iraq. This is all happening because Joe Wilson called them on their crap and said, look, there is no yellow cake. Iraq's not looking for yellow cake. You know that's true. And if you're going to use this to sell the war, you're lying. So that's what they did. So then Karl Rove compromised national security, outed a CIA undercover agent, and also put everyone that works for her or with her at risk, cost taxpayers millions of dollars, made the future of human intelligence more difficult than it should be, all because of revenge and a covert policy on behalf of Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, Karl Rove, Paul Wolfowitz, and Donald Rumsfeld. All right, now there are other elements involved in this, but this is all about the fact that, you know, this was more important to Karl Rove than the human lives that are at stake, and now the human lives that are being lost, the civilian lives that are being lost in Iraq. That is really what this Karl Rove thing is about. So if you want to right-wing spin it, they can, like people don't care. That's because they don't know the truth. The truth is that Karl Rove committed treason. He's most likely prosecutable for perjury. This president is not willing to take control of his own administration. We have a president that got in front of the American people and said, we're just going to have to wait to see what the investigators find out. Well, why don't you walk down the hall, Joey Courage, and find out yourself and take responsibility for this? It's because he can't. It's because he's not in charge. He's been, he's been put in the position just to okay whatever this cabal of evil bastards do. And I'm not letting him off the hook either. He's guilty, if not more guilty, than any of them.
And you might want to ask yourself, well, how are things in Iraq going? Not great. Two Sunnis involved in drafting Iraq's constitution. And remember, folks, we had someone here in our studios more than once who was involved in drafting the interim Iraqi constitution. Well, two Sunnis that were drafting that constitution were assassinated, and one was a member of the committee, the other was an advisor, and their bodyguard was killed. And now there are Iraq is urging a swift beginning to the trial of Saddam Hussein. You may remember him.
Sure. Well, you know, the interesting thing about the Sunnis, Riley, is, as we've been talking about, is that this is a real blow to the new Iraqi government and to the U.S. policy there, because they've really gone, you know, out of their way and really above and beyond to try and integrate Sunnis into this government, because they were the ones that were holding out, and they're the ones that feel that they are being marginalized, and that's where the civil war lies. The fact that Sunnis are being killed, I mean, this is, you know, complete evidence in my head of a civil war actively underway, not just about to happen, but actively underway.
Well, yeah, and you're seeing now the Shia coming together, at least, in saying that, you know, the assassination of these two Sunnis was likely an insurgent move. And they're parsing this very closely. They're not blaming this on Sunnis. But what they are saying is that this is an attempt to disrupt Sunni participation in the government, without which, of course, the government is not seen as legitimate by anybody.
Okay, now it's time for End of the Show Funny. For those of you who are just tuning in, here's a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition Cliff Notes. A toddler in Fort Wayne, Indiana, had her identity stolen twice. She only became aware her identity had been stolen when her preschool turned down her request for a Care Bear sticker. The identity theft comes at a bad time for the child, who recently pooped her pants.
Ooh.
Aww. In addition, some criminals say stealing the actual toddler is a great way to meet divorced moms in the park. Yeah, it is. Just take her with you. Better than a dog. All right. Disney has angered right-to-privacy activists over its use of finger-scanning technology at its theme parks. If you have four fingers or you're wearing a white glove, you are registered as a cartoon character. Scientists believe that they have found the hangover gene. I could have told you years ago that you inherit most of your headaches from your family. See, that's a clever joke. Now that scientists say they can just isolate dry heaves. Now scientists say if they can just isolate the dry heaves gene, they'll be well on their way to cloning the first party animal. There you go. Wow, that was worth stumbling over four times. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. They want to know how many times you're riding the teacups, man. Wake up, sheeple. You'll be in an interrogation with some guy dressed as Goofy asking over and over, how did you get from Russia to Portugal without a passport? Who's your contact? Look at me. Look Goofy in the eye, you bastard. Goofy can see into your soul. Those are the Morning Sedition clip notes. What do we got going tomorrow there, Riley?
Well, tomorrow we've got rocker and filmmaker Rob Zombie. He'll be here with us in studio to discuss his new movie. Author Chuck Klosterman will also be in the studio. He'll be talking about his new book. And we are hoping and we are praying.
It's a rock and roll day tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a rock and roll day. I'm praying that we do finally hear something more conclusive and concrete from our good friend Lawton Smalls.
Oh, yeah. I'm a little concerned, but not as much as I was yesterday.
Well, yeah. I mean, he seems like he's singing. The insurgents are happening. I don't know what's going on with this guy.
Yeah.
We had fun today, Marin.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you tomorrow here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.